I had a good friend. He was actually a college professor in philosophy. And he told me about this story of the little boy that ran in, so excited when he ran into the house, said, "Mommy, Mommy, I am 9 feet tall." She said, "Oh, that's interesting. Could you tell me, how do you know that you're 9 feet tall?" Very proudly, he said, "Because I measured myself." "Well, could you help me understand, where did you get the ruler to measure yourself?" And again, very proudly, he said, "I made it myself." You can be as tall as you want if you make the ruler yourself. I've just described what we're living in now in a postmodern world. The modern world was one that was before World War I and II, and the atmosphere was very positive. Our society felt like we'd be able to solve every problem in the world. And then World War I came, and then World War II came, and imprisoned camps came, and that was all shattered. And all of a sudden, the society realized it's not a positive outcome. And so it became very negative and very sarcastic and very suspicious, entered in what was called the postmodern. Then even later on, it became more intense of measuring ourselves, but not really looking at anybody else's measurements. And that moved us into the postmodern. Sometimes it's even called the metamodern world in which we live now. It's described in a book called The Day America Told the Truth. And the research that was done in that said that they've come to the place now in our culture where there is absolutely no moral consensus in the world in which we live. Everyone is making up their own Ten Commandments. And so as they listened to the people they interviewed, they heard the common stream of these kind of commandments. This is the kind of commandments that are new in a postmodern world. First is, "I will steal from those who won't miss it," really miss it. Or, "I will lie when it suits me, so long as it doesn't cause any real damage." Or, "I will cheat on my spouse. After all, given the chance, he or she will probably do the same." Or, "I will procrastinate at work and do absolutely nothing, at least about one full day every five." And that seems to permeate. So the question comes is, who says so? Where do we find the measuring stick? Is there such a measuring stick? Who says what is right and what is wrong? Is there such a thing? Our culture right now is struggling, and I would even add, not just struggling, but fighting over moral values. We will kill one another on the street in protest because I am right and you are wrong. And you see that constantly in the world in which we live. So not only is it arguments or disagreements, it is literally fights that kill one another over what is morally right and what is morally wrong. Well, when Moses led the children of Israel out of bondage, God began to set up some rules. And there was moral rules known as the Ten Commandments, the Ten Words. But there was also civil laws on how to get along in a civil society. And then there was dietary laws on how to eat and protect yourself. Now, dietary laws, you sometimes look at the Old Testament and say, "Man, how do we keep all these laws?" Well, you don't. We don't obey the civil laws that they had back in wandering through the wilderness. We do not have the dietary laws. You no longer have to worry about, and the Old Testament says, never boil goat meat in milk. Does anybody have a problem with that? There is a tremendous number of dietary rules that they don't apply to us. But the Big Ten, Ten Words, those are carved on stone, never changing. So do they apply in our culture today? And if so, what do they mean? I'd like for you, just for the fun of it, how many of you could say all 10 commandments? Would you raise your hand? Is my vision failing me nowadays? It's interesting that we even allow the 10 words to sort of evaporate. Is that a core for us in the century in which we live now? And if so, how do they apply? It's good every once in a while to look back and say, what are those 10? And what do they mean? Even though many times we could stand and say, these are the 10 commandments, but do we understand what they mean? Let's start with verse 2. It says, I am the Lord. Let's stop there. You see anything unusual about Lord? What is it? It is in all caps. Why is that? It is to designate Yahweh is the Hebrew word that it's translated from. And the word Yahweh, in other words, he's just saying this is who God is. So he begins to give us the Ten Commandments so we understand the very character of God. How would we know otherwise? God wants us to know him. All these rules that we're going to begin rolling out is not rules that God says, if you don't keep these, you're going to get smacked down. No, the whole idea of the rules is, I want you to know me. I want to have a relationship with me. So there are the four rules. I want you to understand my character, and I want you to understand how to have a good personal relationship with me. Next week, well, by the way, we'll look at the last six. And you may think the first four is tough. Next third is real tough. It's on how to get along with that person sitting next with you. That's the tough one right there. But these are going to be, how do you relate to God and know him? And first of all, just to know who he is. He said, I am the Lord, Yahweh, which means I am self-existent, God said. No one's created God. Always has been. He is self-existing. He's the creator. He's eternal. There's no other God like our God. We sang this morning. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. There is no one like our God. God is a person. He wants us to know him. He wants us to know his character. And he'd been spelling that out through all the plagues in Egypt, and we've talked about that already, that every plague showed the power of God over gods of Egypt. Egypt has multitude of gods. And the plagues were the death sentence on God after God after God. So in this first four, he begins to talk about God and what God is like. Now, do any of you have any gods around your house? Do you have any sitting on the mantle? Do you bow down to one when you get up of a morning or when you go to bed? What does it mean that this first commandment is going to be to have no other gods? What is God without the capital G, the little g God? Everyone has a God. It's not a matter if you do or you don't. The question is, what is that God like? An atheist that says, I don't believe there is a God, is just simply saying, I don't believe there is a creator God, but I'm smarter than that because I am God. That's all they're saying. So they still have a God. No one is vacant in the God department. So a God is anything that our hearts cling to, relies upon, or better yet, is central in our life. Whatever that is, and something, and every one of us, something is central in our life. Why is that so important? Whatever is central in our lives, that is the very thing that guides and directs our life. Now, it can be a lot of good things. Your work can become central in your life. People can become central in your life. Even your family can become central in love. God says, I don't want anything in there. I want top priority. And what I've found that even your work and your family and those things are very precious to you, I cannot allow them to become at the very core of my life. Church cannot be the core of my life. God and only God in that relationship. Now, a beautiful thing is when I allow God to be central in my life, it directs how I relate to church and family and work and all the rest of that. And I've long since discovered God knows a whole lot better about giving my life direction than I do. I've tried that. Have you tried that? How's that gone? So I found it's a whole lot better to have God at the steering wheel, the one that's central in my life, the one that's calling the shots for me. He gives direction in my life. He is the creator and he wants priority. So number one is place God central in your life. He says, you shall have no other gods before me. I want top priority. I want to direct your life. And whatever that is that is the very thing that you love, you find joy in, you think about. By the way, what do you think about more than anything else?
Sugar.
And they said sugars. Now, that is a sugar god. See, when you think about it, that's all you think, that becomes your god. Or a lot of times, any of you worry? Worry can crowd God out because that's what you think about all the time. So there's all kinds of things that come, and by the way, very good things that come in central in our life. Whatever that is, that sugar will direct your life. And you just can't pass it by. So that's the point of it, that God says, I want a relationship with you, a loving relationship. I really want that kind of thing with you. These laws are not negative, gotcha kind of laws. No. I'm a person, God said. I am divine. I am sovereign. I do whatever I want to, and what I want to do is best for you. Because I know you. I created you. I created everything. No one has created me. I created everything. I am the creator. I always have been, always will be. You don't understand that because I'm bigger than, smarter than you are. But let nothing else come in front of us. When we begin to lose touch with that, we begin to lose touch with what's right and wrong. Because all of a sudden, the moral character that is eternal and sovereign God begins to be moved out. And now I have become conveniently 9 foot tall. I had a funeral. It's been some time ago. I had a funeral. I sat down with a family and I said, tell me about this person. And they said, well, I'll tell you one thing. They never did anything wrong in all their life. And I thought, man, I'd like to have met them. And by the way, I didn't do this, but I want to say, by the way, would you define wrong for me? They never did anything wrong in all their life. Where do you get that measuring tool, that yardstick, that measuring device? Unless it comes, first of all, of God coming central in our lives, then it's going to be faulty. And you may look like you're 9 feet tall. That will not last. Somewhere along the line, it'll be a great awakening day. The second one is accept no substitutes. You shall not make for yourself any carved images or any likeness or anything that is like heaven above or like God. What's the big deal about that? You say, no problem with that. We have no idols around our house. We've not carved out anything. I remember the first time, I don't remember what country I was in now, I was walking down the street, and it was sort of shocking to me I saw someone there on the street, and you'd see them coming, and they actually bowed down to a wooden image and offered incense. And I thought, oh, this is strange. They're bowing down their life to somebody that's not a person, that something somebody created, something will be one day destroyed. And you'd say, real quickly, I don't do anything like that. But do you have a God that you created? See, one of the challenges in our culture right now is not believing there is a God, but it's creating a God that we desire rather than the God that is. It's not looking at a creator, but it's looking at a created God that we made. And the moment you begin to create your own God, you can become 9 feet tall without any problem whatsoever. You can look perfect if you want to, because you've erased now the ultimate measurement of moral right and wrong. So he said, you know, if we're going to have a relationship, I got to be first in your life. Guys, how far would it go in dating the gal and saying, I'd like to marry you, but I also like Sue and Betty and all the rest of them too. And that'd end that right there, right quickly. Could even end your life. I don't know. But anyway, God says, I want priority. And second, I don't want you to make any substitutes of me. I don't think you'd want to have a picture of your girlfriend or your spouse on the desk and say, honey, I don't need to see you anymore. I've got this photograph of you. It's good enough for me. You cannot create anything that's an image of God. Did you realize that having those gods in our life is what the Bible would say is idolatry? Do you know that idolatry is mentioned more in the Bible than any other sin in all the Bible? Why is that? Because we're always prone. John Calvin says there is an idol-making machine inside of us, always cranking out more idols. Whether we're totally aware of it or not, we always tend to try to recreate God in our own image rather than bowing down to the image of God that really is. And he said, I'm sovereign. Nobody tells me what to do. I'm all-powerful. I always have been, always will be. And I know best for you. I love you. I love you. I love you. And I want best for you. Will you allow me to be first place in your life? Will you not make any kind of false images in your mind of who I am and what I am? Number three, respect the person and character of God. It says in verse 7, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Well, I'm free of that because I don't cuss. I don't say, God, and then add some things to it. I just don't do that. So, not guilty. Or do I fail at that? What does it mean to take the name? Well, let's just stop there. Two things. One is name and one is vain. Name. Names sometimes don't mean that much to us in our culture, but they meant a lot. And that, because in the Old Testament, names describe the character of a person. It'd be a little bit like, you know, if we had a guy named Slim Wilson, what do you think he looked like? And we call one guy Red. What color do you think his hair was? So that's just physical characteristics. But what God is saying here is don't take my name, because my name, we talked about that in a song this morning. We sang, lift up the name, lift up the name, lift up the name of Jesus. You know what Jesus means? The very word Jesus means Savior. And God would come and change people's names. For example, there was Jacob. What was Jacob, the meaning of Jacob? Jacob meant heel, or because he hung on to his brother's heel, and then it was changed. There was a wrestling in the night between Jacob and God. And God says, your name will now be what? Israel. One that moves ahead and and goes ahead and fights for God. In other words, Israel is going to be the nation that prevails with God. You, now Jacob, now to Israel, you will prevail with God. That is Israel. Well, what about a disciple? His name was Simon. It was changed to Peter. By the way, you know what the word Simon means? Do you know what your name means? Do you know what Vernon means? It means boss. No, I got that wrong. Let me back up just a little bit. It means ever greening and flourishing. That's actually what it means. I kind of like the name. Until those commercials came out of Hey Vern, and I lost all respect in those days, but do you know what your name means? Well, that is not necessarily all that important to us today, but it was extremely important. So Jesus says, you're no longer going to be called Simon. By the way, you know what Simon means now? Literally, it meant flat-nosed. I can hardly wait till I get to heaven to find out if he really does. I think when God recreates him with a new body, he's probably getting rid of the flat nose. But anyway, he said, you're not going to be a flat-nosed follower. You're going to be Peter, a solid rock. They're going to know you as Rocky. That was probably laughable because he's everything but a solid rock at that point. But Jesus said, this is what you will be. You will be Rocky, strong, strong. The name represents the person. That's the big deal. I had bumper stickers with the name of the church on them one time and gave them out. That was a big mistake. I saw the way some people drove. I watched some people. I looked at the car, you know, and I think, ooh, they're here? I want to go take the bumper sticker off. I thought about, what if I got t-shirts made for everyone, and it says Briarcliff Church all the way across the front here. Would you do anything, say anything, go anywhere, act anyway that would bring the shame to God and this church? You know, I don't like wearing anything with the church's name on it. Because when I'm in a store checking out, and if I get aggravated, or at a restaurant, I'm going to have to tip a whole lot more if it has a... And then I go in the store, and right before I express my frustration, they say, oh, Vernon, it's so good to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time. Well, they blew that cover, you know, all of a sudden. All it means here is don't take the name, the character, the person God in vain, in emptiness, lighthearted, insincerely, flippantly. You just don't do that because that is the character of God. Alexander the Great, story of him that he, of course, conquered the known world of his day, and he had a custom to allow them to bring anyone that had a petition to him and he'd hear their case. And so this one young soldier was brought before him wearing a tunic of the soldier's dress. And he said, what's the charge against this man? They said, he's a coward. He ran. Cowardice. And he looked at the young guy and he said, young man, what's your name? And the young man said, the same as yours, sir, Alexander. And he got deathly silent. And Alexander the Great looked at him and said, young man, either ways, change your name or change your behavior. Do you think God would ever want to say that to you? Change your name. Don't tell people you go to Briarcliff. Don't tell people you're a follower of Christ if you don't live that way. Change your name or change the way you live. Why is that so important? Because God is holy. Because God is a moral character. And it's to deface him. It's to take a beautiful shirt and put filth all over it. If we do not honor his name. His name is wonderful. There's all kinds of songs. Do you ever know how many songs there is in the Bible that talk about the name over and over? The names of God in the Bible are numerous because there's no one name that would fully describe him. Respect the person and character. If you're going to have a relationship with God, you've got to have a lot of respect for him, of who he is. There's one last one, and that is to set aside some time that is a worship. It says here in verse 8, by the way, this is remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. It's the longest commandment of all the 10. Why is that? Do you ever wonder why? Why did he just go on and on and on and on? And that one, on that said, have no other gods before me. That seems pretty important. But then when he comes down to this one, he just goes on and on and on. You know what? You want to know why I think it's a long one? Are you interested? I knew you would be. How do you get to know anybody really, really well? You have to spend time with them. Did God give us this fourth commandment and saying, okay, stop, no work, no work? Why did he say cease? The word Sabbath means to cease from the labor, stop. Why? Because he wants to get to know us and us to know him. When my parents were, I knew they were dying, and they did 2 weeks apart. And so I wanted to go down there every week and have lunch with them. And I thought, well, this is going to take a lot of time. Well, I do. And I asked some of the people. I said, I'm looking for somebody that's really likes to drive, a good driver, and that won't talk. And I found one. And I said, I appreciate you coming, but I have my computer, my phone, and this is my office. And so after we did that week after week, I thought, I don't even know this guy. I closed my computer and then just had some good conversation. I got to know him. When I first came to seminary, I had a piano left in South Missouri. I was going to bring it up here. And so I borrowed a friend's pickup, and it was a rattle-trap of a pickup, and didn't take too much gas, but the best I recall it took us 5 gallons of oil to get down there and back. And Jim and I rode down there together, and I didn't know Jim all that well, but the time we got back that late that evening, he'd become one of my best friends in seminary. I knew him, and he knew me. So he says here, remember. That's the first. Remember the Sabbath day. Stop so you can remember. Stop so we can have some time together. Stop. Remember the Sabbath. It's interesting here that one of the most productive and profitable fast food chains in the country is what? Chick-fil-A. Even more than McDonald's, Chick-fil-A. So let's go have lunch at Chick-fil-A today. Why? They're closed. Kathy, when he first started the company, decided they would not work on Sunday. He said, we're not in the chicken business, we're in the people business. And I don't want them to lose their sanity. So we're going to close one day a week. You know, God comes and kind of like if somebody has $7 and this guy is saying, I need some money and I'm looking for a handout. And he rolls out one, two, three, four, five, six $1 bills and he keeps one. You'd think that guy would be very grateful. What if he turned around and slapped the other guy so hard, knocked him down and took that one other dollar and ran? You ever slap God? And God said, I gave you 6 days. All I ask for is one. Why would you slap me down when I ask for one day? Remember the Sabbath day and do what? Keep it holy. What does that mean? How do you do that? What do we do? Well, I've got good news for you. We come and stay at church all day long on Sunday, not just 1 hour. Huh? Any amens from that? Anybody excited about that? So what do you do to keep it holy? Remember that the word holy just simply means set aside. Set aside for God. So what do you do when you set aside this day for God? Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Well, one thing is coming to church. It's very straightforward. The Bible says, do not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. We need that. But also, I think on the Lord's Day, it's a great day. God would say, you know, I'd like for you to get together every week with some of my kids. Get to know one another and support one another and love one another and talk about me in the midst of that. But don't leave them out. I'd like for you to remember, just let me talk to you. Would you just let me talk to you for a while? How would he talk to me? Through his word. Do you realize that if you take 1 hour a week, just 1 hour, don't open the Bible any day of the week, it's just one, and read for 1 hour, you'd read through it in a year, even if you just read about 250 words a minute, pretty slow. He'd like to talk to us, but we have to stop long enough to allow him to talk to us. Jesus, I think, would say, you know, if you'd serve somebody on this special day, you'll be doing it for me. Because when you've done it into the least of these others, you've done it for me. So find some ways that you don't put yourself on the throne of this one day that God has asked for. Now, sometimes we miss this last part. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. What does he go on to say? But on 6 days, 6 days you shall what? What? Say it again. Well, I see a lot of you not too excited about that. Work, work. You realize it's not, you know, Sabbath means stop. Stop what? You got to work before you ever get a Sabbath. And how many days? How come not five? Do you grumble over, oh, it says five, I need to turn in six. Do you ever hear anybody say, I just don't have time to go to church because this is the only day I have? Oh, where'd you get it? Did not God give you that? See how easy it is for us to be flippant with God wants us to know. That's the whole point of it. He's not wanting to put hardships on us. He's wanting to set us free. He wants us to know him, but he wants us to labor. Labor is not a curse of God upon us. You know, the ground is, makes it difficult. You realize what we'll do in heaven? We're going to learn for all of eternity. We're going to learn and we're going to work for all of eternity. And it says, do this on what day? On the seventh day. What is today? Did we miss it? Should we have done this yesterday? Why today? What was, as Moses led the people out of bondage, that was at Exodus. Jesus, when he was resurrected out of the grave to set us free from a greater bondage, we get a greater Exodus, and the followers of Christ begin to worship on the day of this new Exodus. Just like they'd worship on the day of this old Exodus, we have a new Exodus. So we stop and remember this new Exodus. I'd like for us to sing a song that would just some way get in our minds that our God is stronger, our God is greater. And we sang a while ago, it's just a quick little chorus, but I want it to get indelibly on our minds before we leave. Would you pray with me? Father, it's so good that you're an awesome God. You are a sovereign God. You're the creator. You always have been, always will be. No one created you. And it's just nearly beyond belief that you want us to know you. And you want to love us in such a personal, real way. You care about us. You want us to be on the right path. Your rules and regulations are for us because you love us. Help us, Lord, to hold you central in our life and don't try to carve out any images that are just a secondhand idea of God. Help us not to take your name in vain, but very seriously. Let us always set aside a day to rest and be with you.